Diğer canlarına yapan bir şey sanmasını en önemli. Onu kusur diyorum. Ben nasıl atlamışlar başlıyorlar.
So Case listened to the teaching with the highest motivation to attain the state of a Buddha so that you can be of service to all sentient beings throughout space.
Ben direkt o şeylerini karşısında bojong kadar yani bojong kadar şöyle yani kafam var yani bojong sebebi çünkü sen başı başı o zaman ne şey o konbeni tüm tarihi bojong sebebi yani kafam var yani sen ki bu ne şu sebebi
So tonight the term is Lojong mind training. And as for Lojong pointed out, what is Lojong? Lojong is a process of training the mind so that you can develop a fresh bodhicitta that you have not developed thus far, to enhance bodhicitta that you have developed. And talking about this, I described to you briefly the 10 benefits of developing bodhicitta. There are quite a few mind training manuals or texts, namely 7-point mind training, 8 stanza mind training, solar rays or sun, the light of the sun, Lojong rays, Lojong texts, and so on. The important points of all these many mind training texts are neatly subsumed by Lojong Dendunma, the 7-point mind training. So what are the 7 points? The 7 points are, Wundu means preliminaries. Preliminaries of Lojong and And the second is developing or training the mind to become bodhicitta or to develop bodhicitta. And the third one is the benchmark of having developed bodhicitta. Next one is Lojong-tse, isn't it? So, slight modification is needed. Let's go through them once more. What are the seven points? First is Ngundu, preliminaries. Second is developing bodhicitta. Third is transforming or transmuting misfortunes into path, spiritual vehicle. And Sumba Kingan and Shiva is not your terrible. The fourth is a Lojong attack, the benchmark of having the mind having been trained. And the fifth one is 세제게 냠는 디게 땀바. Means a presentation, a cohesive presentation of one life practice. Okay. Mm-hmm. Presentation of one life practice in a cohesive manner. The sixth is the commitments that you need to keep when you train or when you embrace and train the mind in the mind training text. And then the seventh is Lojong Labja. Labja means things to be trained, but it's called precepts. The seventh is precepts. So, as I've pointed out, mind training ultimately boils down to training the mind to become bodhicitta. So when your mind becomes bodhicitta, before it becomes bodhicitta, it must understand the twin purpose or the twin aspiration, the twin purpose. Or let's say twin purpose. And the twin purposes for oneself and for others. And the purpose of others is fulfilled by aspiration to service to others. Purpose to self. Self-purpose is met by achieving, by aspiration to Buddhahood. So, when you train the mind in the twin aspirations of a bodhicitta, you do so by training initially, as a preliminary, the mind in compassion, you know, pure, selfless, unbounded compassion. In order that your mind becomes compassion, a strong compassion, like that of a loving mother's compassion for her only child. For your mind to become compassion or compassionate mind, you need to see all sentient beings as simply adorable. You know, you find them just simply endearing and adorable, and you are, in other words, you need to develop what is called loving affection. Affectionate love, or anyway, affection. You won't jump up. How can we begin to see, without any prejudice, all sentient beings as adorable and in a deeply lovable? You can do so once you develop a genuine sense of closeness, genuine sense of empathy and closeness. How can we develop a sense of empathy and closeness? You can do that by training the mind in the heart topic that all sentient beings have been once a mother in the past, and that when they have been once a mother, they have been most kind. So once you develop how each and every being has been mother, and as mother, how they have been just simply unconditionally loving, you naturally become close to them. And seeing sentient beings as a mother and remembering their kindness is a common, it's a common base for both two approaches. For that to happen, the mind needed to have been immersed in the preliminaries, the first of the 7 points. The preliminaries would include practitioners of small and middling capacities, right from developing, close rapport with your spiritual mentor to understanding law of causation, the true nature of suffering, and there's nothing at all desirable in samsara. And therefore, your mind needed to have become totally averse and needed to have developed strong longing for permanent cessation. So all these needed to have been gone through. So what do you think it means preliminary dharma? That's the first point. And in a way, what do you think it means preliminary practices and preliminary topics are topics of a lamrim? And therefore, the topics of a lamrim will be covered in due course as we go through the lamrim section. And now, therefore, let's move on to the second of the 7 points, which is training the mind in bodhicitta. There are two, training the mind in relative bodhicitta and ultimate bodhicitta. Between the two, based on the tradition practiced by past teachers and the gurus, training the mind in ultimate bodhicitta is presented subsequent to training the mind in relative bodhicitta. So when you train the mind in the Guntuk Jangju Wisdom, conventional or relative for the bodhicitta, you do so under or going through five subject means subsect or sections or divisions. And the first is Dakshin Nyamba. Equalizing self and others, or bringing self and others on the same footing. Dakshin, that means self, Shin means other, Nyamba means make them equal. or see them as equal. No. Nipa de sumara de nipa de niyo de.
Nipa de ne rongjin de shi ne shen go kun de samba.
No.
Samba de jen de shen go kun de samba.
So, the second is, reflecting on crippling drawbacks of self-centeredness from many, in many ways, or from many angles. Thirdly, reflecting on enlightening benefit, or enlightening virtue of cherishing others.
Ani jawa de doje jawa ni se.
And the fourth is dakshin jawa ng, the actual the fourth is then exchanging self for other, which means exchanging one's self-centeredness for the love of other. So it's called actual exchange of self for other. And the fifth section is how to do Tonglen practice based on this. So, now let me briefly talk about the first point. Dakshin Nyamba means bringing self and others on the same footing, or seeing them as the same, which is a way of saying practicing sense of equanimity between self and others. And this practice of equanimity that comes under the second approach of developing bodhicitta is said to be superior to other forms of practice of equanimity. There is also a practice of equanimity that precedes the first approach of developing bodhicitta. The first approach is six cause, one effect approach. Before we go through the six causes and the resultant bodhicitta as a whole approach, the entire approach needs to be based on, again, a sense of equanimity, where you have no prejudice at all between prejudice of between enemies and your beloved ones. You have no hostility towards so-called enemies. You have no prejudicial passion and a love, endearment towards so-called friends. So you have completely neutralized any kind of prejudice in the mind.
Ne temel dajmola ne yugo.
As for equanimity, there could be equanimity in terms of sensation. You neither feel pain nor pleasure. You are, therefore, a neutral feeling. And Dushi Dangyo means equanimity in terms of discriminating awareness. And then the third is equanimity in terms of the four immeasurables. Now, the equanimity that is covered in Dakshin Nyamji, which is in the second approach to developing Bodhicitta, Geshe-la says is superior to all others. Pardon?
Is it discriminating awareness?
No, he didn't say no. So, Dangyum Chebetin, equanimity that comes under the second approach called equalizing and exchanging self for others is said to be Dangyum Chebetin, extraordinary equanimity. It's said to be extraordinary in that whatever you do it for one and others completely. If you want, when it comes to dispelling suffering, you dispel suffering of others and of oneself equally. And when you work for happiness, you work for everyone's happiness, not just your or not just the others. So you are very inclusive in what you do, whether developing, working for happiness, or whether overcoming, dispelling suffering, and you include all in this. So, now here, there are 9 steps to developing this Dangyum. And you must take this seriously and then try your best, try your hardest, to practice this so that you are serious in developing Bodhicitta. So the first 3 steps involve self, whereby you work for happiness of others and dispel suffering of others. So Rang Gyutindi Jenam is you consider your own Rang Gyutindi Jenam Rang Tanda Sigurabad. Rang Gyutindi Jenam Karina. So now it means the first 3 steps involve in achieving happiness and dispelling suffering, putting yourself in their shoes. So the 9 round, the nine steps to developing equanimity needs to be incorporated into a Guru Puja stanza, which is just as you do not wish even slightest suffering, and just as you want the maximum happiness, so do all others, and so on. There's a stanza from the Guru Puja. In the Guru Puja, I think on page 64 or something, in all texts. Anyway, sorry. Where it says, reviewing the parts and stages, you know, at the end, if you go through that, so you will find that. The first step is just as you throughout beginningless time have never wanted even slightest suffering and have wanted all happiness and remain insatiable in wanting happiness, so have all other beings. So that's the first one. So let me elaborate on this. So here we use the analogy of 10 destitutes, utter destitutes, or 10 beggars who are all in the same boat. They have nothing and they want in the basic necessity at least, and they have come to you and you have the resources to, you have the means to help them. When they all turn up seeking your help and they're in the same boat, no difference at all, then wouldn't it be wrong even to mildly become prejudicial in giving a bit more to one of the beggars and then to other beggars? How could you? There's no way you could do that, because as an unbiased, a person of integrity, you do whatever you can equally for all the 10 beggars. In the same way, all sentient beings are like 10 beggars. All are like in that they are without lasting, dependable, countable happiness, and yet they seek happiness, and they would remain insatiable in wanting happiness, in experiencing happiness, when all are in the same boat. And if you are in a position to help them, how could you afford to give a bit more to some sentient being, or do a bit more, whether giving happiness or dispelling suffering, and do a bit less with regard to others? And when the knowledge that it is wrong on my part to do so is the first step. And the knowledge that if I'm in a position to help, I need to iron out my prejudices and do what I can equally for all. Okay, the second surat, the analogy was the second step. The analogy of ten backers was the second step of developing. Okay, the second of the first three steps. No. So Kishila says, to make sure that you have got it right, let me go through the first. The first of the three steps is to see that one and all are alike in not wanting slightest happiness, the slightest suffering, misery, and in not being and in remaining insatiable in wanting happiness. That was the first one. You create and you see that one and others are alike in this respect. The second one was the second step considers how sentient beings lack happiness and how they seek happiness in the maximum way, and there we use the analogy of the ten beggars. The third step is considering how all sentient beings are equally afflicted, and indeed, sentient beings do not want suffering, and yet they are inevitably afflicted with all kinds of suffering. And here you could consider the 10 patients suffering from terminally illness like cancer. If 10 people come to you with their cancer, and if you are in a position to help them, now, you know, it would be wrong, and your conscience will tell you that it would be wrong not to do equally for all 10 patients, and it would be utterly wrong to exercise even slightest prejudice here. In the same way, sentient being, we need to consider how sentient beings are oppressed by suffering. So this is called Rangatembe Yuten Sum, means three reasons or three steps involving one whereby you put yourself in their shoes, as it were, and then try to develop even-mindedness in whatever you do in terms of accomplishment of suffering, sorry, of happiness and dispelling of suffering. Now, the next three steps are Janetime Gyuntsen Sunmin's three steps pertaining to others. The first of this is okay, the point of considering kindness of others. In kindness of others, in one's experience of in one's experience of happiness, ranging from a fleeting relief experienced by a hell being where they are incessantly tortured, to experiencing and a boundless peace of Buddhahood, and that how all forms of dawa sukha necessarily comes from others, and others, without others, no happiness, small or the highest, could come from. And then and all kinds of happiness that we experience come necessarily from other sentient beings. When they play the role of a mother in a given lifetime, and in a majority of times when they do not become our parents, but nevertheless never stop contributing to one's happiness. So that's the first one. The second point is negating the reservation that sentient beings not invariably, invariably bring us happiness, on the grounds that aren't there times when sentient beings, when others bring all kinds of suffering, they are the reasons why you experience suffering, and they harm you. They harm you physically, they rob your possessions, they hurt you physically, psychologically, and so on. Therefore, how could you say that sentient beings invariably bring happiness? Then, to negate that reservation, this qualm, you use the analogy of psychological patient. For example, if somebody in the conventional Tibetan society, if somebody becomes possessed by a spirit, and then they become wild and aggressive and come to harm you, because you understand that the person is possessed by a spirit, and therefore you don't become angry towards the person when they harm you, because you know the person fundamentally has is always good, and you don't become angry with the person. You try to do, you rake your brains to find out what you can do to stop the person becoming possessed. In the same way, when sentient beings harm you, they harm you not because they are inherently evil and have always wanted to harm you. They are eternally sadistic. They are never like that. When they harm you, they have fallen victims to negative thought, to the demons of negative thought. So rather than getting angry on the grounds that they harm you, you as a more developed person, mature, spiritually mature, you rake your brains. What I can do to help the person, and then don't lose the sight that sentient beings are always good and helpful, and not become angry towards them.
So, crowing in it, I don't think it's a good one.
So the third point here is to negate and to put an end to the qualm that sentient beings suffer from prejudices, because they have a sense of enmity towards what they consider as enemy, and sense of attachment to what they called friends and dear ones. Then you and because of that, you might say, I might be considered either an enemy or an attachment. Then you put an end to this qualm by educating yourself by saying, when sentient beings suffer from short-sighted prejudices or such prejudices, they suffer these prejudices due to ignorance, due to malikpa, means avidya, or due to ignorance of karma, due to ignorance of the true nature of who they are, due to ignorance of long-term past natural relationships they have had, and this short-term prejudice they tend to manifest is nothing more than the kind of a sheepish prejudice 10 sheep may have who have been taken on in a truck to the prison work, and where they're all going to be, they're waiting to be killed. But before they killed, they were jostling for space and, you know, fighting and developing some kind of enmity and attachment among themselves. How pity it is, how pointless that is. And your wisdom says, that is utterly pointless. In the same way, prejudices, behavior, sentient beings manifest among themselves and consequently towards you, are nothing more than that. You needn't be so upset by short-sighted temporal behavior. Now, the last three points to developing equanimity is called Dandamla Tenpe Mipur, means three rounds of visualization or three steps pertaining to the ultimate nature of things. Now, from ultimate nature point of view, no one is inherently one's enemy, no one is inherently one's beloved. If beings were inherently enemies, if they are inherently enemies, and if they are inherently kind and beloved, then the Buddha, who has omniscient knowledge, would be able to see categorically, and then would have informed, be careful, those beings are inherently evil, they are inherently enemies, and so on. So Buddha has not seen anyone to be inherently enemy, anyone to be inherently friend. On Buddha's part, you know, if somebody was massaging Buddha's left arm, the left side of the body, and then applying ointment, you know, then soothing the Buddha, and on the right hand side, there was someone heckling Buddha's, peeling away his skin and chopping his, you know, the right side into pieces. The Buddha has equal compassion, equal love, equal love for both of the two people. Buddha cares as much for the person seemingly hurting the Buddha as Buddha cares for somebody, you know, pampering him on the left hand side. So Buddha does not see anyone to be enemy or anyone to be friend. Buddha knows only one thing, and to see all as the same and then love them.
Daniel,
The first point in that was the Buddha did not see. The second point, that no one is enemy, no one is friend, in ultimate sense, is this. However, if sentient beings were if sentient beings were enemies and friends in and of themselves, in a pre-made nature, inherently enemies, inherently friends, then they would remain in that role at all times, such that the relationship between beings would never change. However, it's not the case. You know, relationship among sentient beings change. For example, someone who was really distant towards you, and therefore even hostile in the early part of your life, may turn into somebody that you like so much, and have become your best friend, and vice versa. So this clearly shows somebody that you branded enemy became your friend, and somebody that you who was your the friend of your bosom of, you know, the relationship goes wrong due to self-cherishing perceptions and attitude, and then you become distant and begin to have hostility. So relationship between sentient beings are never fixed. They are always in flux and changing. Not only do the relationship of enmity and friendship change, across lifetime, it changes even one lifetime. It changes even in a matter of a day. Somebody that you liked so much in the morning, now, whatever reason, they develop, for whatever reason, now they are distancing themselves from you, and now they have become your enemies or whatever. So this clearly shows, Geshe-la says, no one is intrinsically enemy, no one is intrinsically friends.
그거 담아져서는다 저도냐 생에 대해서 또래 봤다고 당했었잖아. 파리 생에 대해서 지를 했더니 파리 생에 더 뒤에는 평일에 그냥 지를 했잖아요. 그럼 요한도 사태니 남자들냐 생에 소식은 또 배지고 봤다고 당이 반전의 수술 중에는 좀 안 양만 했어.
The third point that all sentient beings are the same. No one is enemy, no one is friend. In terms of the ultimate point, is that what you call an enemy and what you call a friend is nothing more than the construct of a mind, the construct of your mind. Tokpe means is a label you affix onto people. For example, for example, this side of the hill and that side of the hill. So when you this side of the hill is only this side of the hill is called this only because you are here, and because you are here, you call it this. The moment you move to the other side, the hill over there, then you will call that hill this hill, and the hill you were before, you will call that hill over there. And it's you who project things as this and that. In the same way, it is you who project people to be enemies or people to be friends. People, beings by themselves, are neither enemies nor friends. der Ikon. So, I have now presented three rounds of three sets of three visualizations, and Geshe-la has said before.
Oh, thank you.
Has said before that we take this very seriously in developing equanimity, and now he advises us that we go through this at the end of each of these three steps, then you see that you are able to come to a strong conclusion of seeing all, one and all, as one and all alike. And seeing that one and all are alike in every respect, then leave no room for prejudice in your heart, so that when you do anything to achieve happiness, you would achieve happiness for all, one and all. And when you do something to dispel suffering, to overcome problems, then you will do it not just for yourself, for all, one and all equally, because we have just established considering these nine steps that all sentient beings are the same. So these three sets of three visualization or steps are extremely useful in helping us realize that all sentient beings are alike, including oneself. And this realization that all are alike then helps us what Geshe-la calls Dewa Dumna Dumnyam. Dumnyam Sena Senyam. Dewa Dumna Dumnyam is if you want to achieve happiness, then you want to achieve happiness for all. If you want to dispel suffering, then you want to dispel suffering of all, not just few, or not just yourself. So this is, you know, universal inclusiveness in here. And therefore, I have talked long enough. Now I want you to spend 10 minutes to think about this. So if you can't remember all the nine steps, but please remember the three major steps, or the three major. First one is all sentient beings are the same in that they seek happiness and they do not and they seek overcoming suffering. Secondly, all sentient beings are equally kind to one. Regardless of what roles they play, parental roles, at times of playing parental roles or not. And the third is all sentient beings are the same in terms of the ultimate nature of, or in terms of their ultimate nature. Okay, then here there were 3 points. Buddha did not see it, and you know, sentient beings, if they were inherently enemies or so on, then relationships would never change. And the third one was that it is you who project enmity and friendship and so on. So if you can remember the three things, three major ones, sentient beings are alike because they seek happiness. Sentient beings are alike because they all have been immeasurably kind. Sentient beings are alike because, ultimately speaking, they lack inherent characteristics of being enemy or friends. So please, I want you to think about 10 minutes. So when you consider these points, you know, in the order they are presented, then, you know, your heart feels a different sensation or feeling. And the threads working for a sentient being will begin to make a new sense, fresh sense. And not only do you say it verbally, it won't be just lip service. It would mean, it would become a real personal issue to do something for all sentient beings. So from today onwards, you know, if you could, tonight we just considered in this short meditation, the three main sections, and then try, if you can, remember that all the three steps in each of these three sections, and then, you know, add a bit more, and do it on a regular basis. Don't make it just one-time practice, one-time reflection. Make it a kind of a more routine. Okay, thank you very much. The time is up. Shall we say the prayers?
Mm-hmm.